30 WEOL.
Minutes after 5 o'clock. Only 45 minutes remain on this Monday edition of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Counting down the days in September. As a matter of fact, we only have 5 more shows. Actually, Matt Douglas has 5 more shows in September. I only have 4. I will be gone on Friday and next Monday, for that matter, but we'll dive into that a little bit later on. That means that we are counting down the days until the beginning of a brand new Cleveland Cavaliers basketball season. As a matter of fact, they had their media day today. Rick Noland with the Chronicle Telegram and the Medina Gazette was there, and he joins us right now on the hotline. Rick, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on. It's been a little while since we had you on, since the Cavaliers were, well, trying to rebuild over the course of the offseason. It's going to be a different look for this team, no question about that. Media Day, Rick, is always a little bit of a circus for good reasons and bad, but what were your major takeaways from Media Day today?
Well, one, being the crusty old cuss that I am, it just takes way too long. But more to the point of what people care about, and not my personal opinion, it was much more a quieter atmosphere. You know, Brian Windhorst from ESPN wasn't there. You know, next to no national people that I knew of were there. In fact, no national people. Back just to the local beat writers and websites and radio stations and television stations, you know, post LeBron, just like it was the first time, you know, for the 4 seasons he was gone. So it was definitely more relaxed and quieter, took less time, but certainly also wasn't nearly the buzz and excitement as there had been the previous 4 seasons.
Well, you had tweeted out yesterday that since the media day was going to be today, you were asking all of your followers, you know, what do you really want to know after a 5-hour session? And you were serious. You wanted to put it out there to see what folks really wanted to know about the Cavs. Not that a whole lot comes out of media day. Well, let me send that question to you. You know, what is it that you really want to know about this team heading into a brand new season, which is just full of unknowns?
Well, I mean, I don't think you'll learn anything, first of all, at media day. Nothing changed today from last week or the week before that or the week before that. We know who's going to be on this team, who's going to be in camp. We have a pretty good idea, you know, who 8 or 9 of the rotational players are going to be. What I just found striking, and when you called, I was actually going back and looking at the Cavs roster in 2010. 11, which was the 19-63 season, the first one after LeBron left the first time when they lost 26 in a row and 36 out of 37. Let me throw a few names at you real quick. Christian Ayanga.
Wow. Okay.
Semi Erdan. Samardo Samuels. Joey Graham. Ryan Hollins, and we could go on. I think I wrote about 7 of them down for the story I'm in the process of writing. So my point being, they're taking a complete opposite approach this time around than they did the first time. The first time was complete and utter tank mode. They proceeded to get the number one pick 3 times in 4 years after LeBron left, being Kyrie, the immortal Anthony Bennett, and Anthony Wiggins, who never played because LeBron came back and they traded him. But their approach this time is to compete and to try to make the playoffs, and then they believe they can. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I I can't rule it out in an Eastern Conference that still only has six legitimate teams that are playoff caliber, I think. But I think we'll have a way better idea a month or two into this season, whether it's to go, you know, no holds barred to try to get the seventh or eighth seed and probably get beat in the first round, or to rein that back in again and make this season more about playing, you know, guys that are younger, as opposed to the Kyle Korvers and the J.R. Smiths, who I don't think is going to play very much anyway, the George Hills, guys like that. So I think they're going in with the idea of doing everything they can to win. I would hope at the same time that they also are still thinking, you know, hey, we might have to alter that plan if things don't go as well as we think they might, you know, from the get-go.
How much of that teeters on Colin Sexton and what they expect out of him this year?
Well, we're going to find that out, too. You know, if I'm coaching the Cavs, he's on my first team starting tomorrow at the first practice, and he's going to be there every night he's healthy, because we're talking about a number 10 pick in the draft who is 19 years old, who showed a lot of promise in summer league, and who is part of the future of this team. And the alternative is a 33-year-old George Hill, who is a fantastic guy and a good locker room presence, but he's never been much more than a marginal at best starting point guard in this league. So we'll know here in the, you know, in the next few days what Ty Lue's thinking. Does he want to make Sexton earn it and give Hill a realistic opportunity of holding on to that job? Is he just going to say, hey, kid, you're our future, it's your team, run it? We'll find that out here in the coming days.
Rick Nolan with the Chronicle Telegram and Medina Gazette joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Before I get into the next question, I just need to say I'm glad you stopped at those four names that you went over back in the 2010-11 season. Rick, you went through those four names. I felt like Steve Carell in 40-Year-Old Virgin when he was having his chest waxed. Oh, God, that was painful to listen to, man.
There's about seven or eight of them that'll give you the same reaction.
Oh, just brutal. Just brutal. I mean, you think back to that year and just how bad it was. You mentioned, obviously, this year a totally different approach. And while we're on that topic, you know, this came up yesterday, and I don't know how realistic this is. You know, people can always say, you know, we're kind of in the midst of trade talks with team X, Y, and Z, and obviously the hottest commodity right now in the NBA trade market is Jimmy Butler, making no bones about how he doesn't want to play in Minnesota next year. The Cavs were thrown into that mix. How much stock do you put into that rumor? Do you think there's anything to take out of the Cavs being involved in those talks at all?
Well, I mean, I think I'm 100% certain there's truth to the rumor that the Cavs have expressed an interest. I think there's about a 2% chance that he winds up here for several reasons. One being they don't have anything to trade for him. You know, people love trade. Well, let's give them Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. Well, they don't want those guys any more than, you know, there's a reason the Cavs want to get rid of those guys. They're making more money than they should be. You know, they're not nearly as good as Jimmy Butler. I mean, they're going to want Colin Sexton. They're going to want, you know, there's not many other guys that you would even want on this team. I think Kevin Love's kind of an untouchable. And he's already had his stint in Minnesota. I think beyond that, it might be to their benefit that it doesn't work out, because Jimmy Butler's listed a handful of teams he'd like to play for when he's a restricted free agent next summer, and the Cavs are not one of them. So they could be parting with, you know, some quality young players for a guy who is going to leave after 1 year and sign for 5 years and $190 million elsewhere. You know, to their credit, they're looking into it, because it's your job as a GM to look into everything. But I see next to no chance of it actually coming to fruition.
along those same lines on the trade front. You know, we keep hearing the same names included in trade discussions over and over and over again with J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Kyle Korver. Let's start with J.R. and Tristan because
George Hill, you can throw George Hill in there too.
Sure. I mean, all guys making a heck of a lot of money. And I guess we'll start with J.R. and Tristan Thompson because those are guys who have a lot of money left on those contracts as well. What are the chances that one of or both of these guys are still on the roster at the end of the regular season?
Well, I think with JR, you're in a bit of a catch-22. On the one hand, you could play him and hope he plays well, and he might draw some interest from a contender. His salary is actually very cap-friendly next year because I think only a little over $3 million of the $15 million is guaranteed. So that could be an attraction to a team. But I have a hard time seeing any role at all for him on this team as currently constructed. So, you know, he wasn't very good 2 years ago. He was worse last year, and it's hard to see him playing much this year. So I don't know that, you know, that's you know, exactly the trend that prospective trade teams you're trying to trade with want to see. So I think they're probably stuck with him, and then maybe they can get rid of him following the season for something because a team's going to want his salary to just come off their books. The same with George Hill, who's going to make, I think, $20 million this year. He's on the books for $19 million next year, but only $1 million of that's guaranteed, so that makes him attractive to some other teams, and he can still play a little bit. So, you know, but you're going to have to take on a lot of salary to make that work. Tristan, I don't know. His contract is too high, but in today's NBA world, what's too high anymore? I mean, you're talking about guys who are making 30, 35, even $40 million a year in some instances, and you know, 17 is not ridiculous amount. I just don't know, you know, off the top of my head, who wants them, what fits. And I think, again, all these things, I think, they're not going to happen tomorrow. These are trade deadline deals when you're looking at either a team that's, A, trying to go in tank mode and save as much money as possible, or B, thinks a player might be a missing piece to help them become a legitimate contender. So I don't see anything along those lines happening unless you know, Kobe Altman can pull a rabbit out of his hat and convince somebody, you know, to take some of these guys. I think Korver, you know, would be attractive to some teams, but you know, again, what are you going to get back? It's, you know, you don't trade guys just to trade them, and you got to take back close to equal salary in return. So they're not in a horrible position that way, but they're not in an ideal spot. And, you know, with Kevin Love the extension, it's not like they're, you know, a couple moves away from being able to sign a max contract and free agency either. That's going to take some work.
Well, I'm going to take Kevin Love and Colin Sexton out of this equation because I would think those two guys would be the obvious answer to this question. But taking those two guys out of this equation, no Love, no Sexton, and assuming that no trades are made before the end of the year, who on the current roster outside of those two players are you expecting the most from this year?
I would probably say Jetty because I think he's going to get to play 32 to 38 minutes most games. I expect when all's said and done, he's probably going to be this team's starting small forward. He's a guy who had a good summer. And I think he's got the type of game where he can be good in a lot of different ways. He's not a horrible defender. He's, a capable ball handler, has good vision, can pass. He's willing to defend. He can make some plays off the dribble for you. He's worked hard on his shot. Still got to get better. But I think just on sheer volume of minutes and opportunities combined with potential skill level, I'd have to put him third right now. And, you know, I was super high, and not to ramble on, but I was super high on Rodney Hood when the trades were made last season, and he was a tremendous disappointment. And I don't know, you know, you can make an argument that he's their third best player on paper. But what are you going to get there? And the more he plays, the more money he's going to demand next year as an unrestricted free agent after getting burned badly this year and having to take a qualifying offer. So, you know, they have a plethora of guys at that guard spot with Jordan Clarkson in there as well, and JR and Korver capable of playing there some, and Sexton and Hill. So it's going to be interesting. I hope and I think that Sexton will get his time, and the rest of those guys will just have to earn it. Who starts there, I have no idea. Could actually be George Hill as a way of having two point guards on the floor and lessening some pressure on the 19-year-old, at least at the beginning of the season. And then maybe, you know, you go to Clarkson or Rodney Hood later on.
And you're right. Hood's a fascinating name to keep an eye on. I was kind of surprised that he didn't get any action. I mean,
none.
Yeah, and that was really surprising to me, simply because, you know, what he did with the Cavs in such a short amount of time seemed to be all teams were willing to look at. People seem to forget outside of basketball that when he was with the Jazz, he was pretty darn good. And then he came to the Cavs and things just didn't line up.
Well, and then he kind of got timid. And then he got moody and even refused to go into one playoff game during garbage time. He said the right things today, but I'm firmly convinced that when he opted out of his contract, he thought somebody was going to offer him $8 or $9 million a year for multiple years, and he was going to either make the Cavs match it or he was going to be okay going elsewhere. You know, now's one of those interesting things is, do the Cavs give him tons and tons of playing time and, you know, hope he returns to that 16 or 17-point scorer he was in Utah? But if he does, you know, are they going to, do they want to be super aggressive in paying him potentially 12, 13, 14, 15 million a year for multiple years? Because some other team might. So it's a bit of a quandary they're in there too. I think his play will determine that. And he's a guy, Andy, quite frankly, that I think will be better in the system they're going to have to run this year, because you know, over the last 2 years they've lost two of the most ball dominant one on one players in the league, and they don't have much of that on this team right now. So there's going to be not just ball movement, but I think there's going to be a lot more player movement than we've seen in any of the last 4 years.
Well, it should be a lot of fun to watch. If for no other reason, boy, there are a lot of unknowns on this team, no doubt about that. Rick, as always, we appreciate the time very much, and we will do it again as soon as we get closer to the start of the season.
Sounds good. I will talk to you then.
Sounds good. Thank you, Rick. Again, Rick Noland with the Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon to talk Cavs. Matt Douglas, that season begins here in just a few weeks. It's creeping up on us.
Yeah, it's going to be here before we know it. I'm intrigued, kind of as Rick alluded to there. No one really knows what to expect of this team. Could they be a playoff team in an Eastern Conference that's moderately weak, or will they kind of go the other end on things? A lot of questions still up there.
No question about that. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back here in just a few. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.
Subs, salads, wings, pizza. Call Caseria Pizzeria.